Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you're listening to Total EM. I have been debating for a long time now if I should have a podcast on this because this is one of the most controversial subjects I have talked about at all recently, and is probably one that is going to be a little more challenging for people to keep an open mind on because a lot of people have already formed opinions. And I'll admit, when I was doing the research for this podcast myself and going through the literature and trying to get the background evidence and all those types of things, I actually learned quite a bit that really opened my eyes to appreciate more what is out there and how things occurred the way they did to lead us to where we are now. And that is masks for COVID-19. I'm not necessarily talking about N95 respirators or other respirator devices, although we're going to talk about that a little bit, but I'm talking about like surgical masks and simple cloth masks and those types of things that are being used. And as most, if not all of you listening know, there has been quite a bit of debate around this. And I've really been debating, do I approach this subject and how do I approach it? So what I am going to do here is I am going to be very matter of fact. I'm going to try and avoid the politics as much as possible on this because that should not be an issue here. It should be about the science and about facts. So that's what you're going to get in this podcast. We're going to talk about the myths that are there and talk about what is true and what is not. Since the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, this has been a discussion, but we're going to focus on the rapidly changing evidence, and especially what has been seen more recently. It is really, really, really important as you go through, and some of you who may already be showing studies and quoting them and so on and so forth, that you watch the dates that they were released and how they were released from the scientific community, if they even came from the scientific community. Did they come from some YouTube video that has no actual evidence supporting it that has been validated in any way, shape, or form? Or is this a really old study that has since been shown as maybe not entirely accurate, or maybe one that newer evidence has helped prove something different? Or maybe it's the fact that there was lack of evidence before, and now there is evidence to show something entirely different. Like I said, I would highly encourage that when you're looking through all this to look at the dates of publication. And as we're going to be talking about the studies, I'm going to talk about the dates of publication. And all of these, as always, are linked to the show notes. So make sure to go to the blog side of the podcast, totalem.org, podcast number 207, Myths on Masks for COVID-19. And you will be able to find the details of what we are talking about. Let's go ahead and get started on the first myth, probably the biggest myth, the one that really helps address the main issue and then everything else builds off of that. And that is, and that myth is, masks don't work. Well, this is probably the biggest argument, like I said, because there is so much out there with people trying to debate the efficacy of masks. And it really comes down to some basic issues that come up. But fortunately, there is a large amount of data to help support the idea that masks actually do work. But let's emphasize what we're talking about here. Regular masks, like we're not talking about N95 respirators for a minute, but just regular face masks or surgical masks are the ones where it's less about you contracting it and more about you not spreading it, because we know there's asymptomatic spread and that's a big problem. So if we can provide a barrier to help reduce that spread, whether it's when we talk, cough, sneeze, yell, any number of things that helps transmit particles away, this is an important aspect. We want the mask. Now, again, the respirators serve their own function and they actually do help in part protect the user. So if we want to protect ourselves, N95s are more helpful. But if we want to protect others, simple masks are effective. And we're going to talk a lot more about that here in a moment. But that's where the key of this argument is because a lot of people are trying to argue that, well, this doesn't work because the mask doesn't protect us. And that is true. It doesn't do a lot of protection for yourself. It's more about protecting others. And if everyone's using it, then you are providing safety to the group, the herd, if you will, if we're talking about kind of like a herd immunity approach to this. The first study I want to talk about is the biggest, and it was published on June 1st, 2020 in The Lancet by Chu et al., collecting 172 observational studies from 16 countries that included 25,697 patients. This is a gigantic systematic review and meta-analysis that supported physical distancing of 1 meter, which is about 3.3 feet or more, and the optimum use of face masks, respirators, and eye protection in public and healthcare settings. N95 respirators were better than regular face masks, but both were effective. And this study found masks can lead to an 85% reduction in transmission. Building off of that, airborne transmission has been considered the dominant route for the spread of COVID-19. And the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America published a research article by Tseng et al. On June 30th, 2020, covering this issue. They discussed how the virus is airborne in nature and a major reason for the spread. By studying mitigation measures in Wuhan, Italy, and New York City, they found that protective measures, including face masks in public, reduced the number of infections by over 78,000 in Italy and over 66,000 in New York City over the course of a month or less. Check the two figures that we have in the show notes because they talk about how this airborne transmission occurs, and it shows very nicely how face coverings made the largest difference in transmission compared to other interventions such as social distancing and stay-at-home orders. That doesn't mean that social distancing and stay-at-home orders don't work. It means that each one plays an important role. But what was really interesting behind all this was that the face masks provided the biggest change in transmission as far as reducing the rate of transmission. Let's talk about a little bit what the graph on there shows about that whole airborne transmission. Let's talk about when someone coughs or sneezes. Okay, so they shed the virus from them, and a lot of these are bigger droplets in size. And, you know, a lot of people think about how small the viral particles are, which is true. An individual viral particle is very small, but it's really uncommon, especially when we're talking about the overall amount of what is being coughed or sneezed at, to actually be truly airborne in very small clumps. And instead, what usually happens is they form bigger droplets. And actually, the louder you are or the more you cough or sneeze, the bigger the droplets are. Regular talking atomizes probably the most out of all of it, with a few exceptions. But really, you're going to see that the bigger the volume, in a sense, of what's going on and how quickly and stuff like that, the more droplets you get. And the good news is with droplets is droplets, the bigger they are, the sooner they fall, and the harder it is for them to transmit past the mask because they don't filter through the mask as easily. So we want the bigger droplets because it helps control it better. And what happens is the virus is in droplets of water, and that will then fall out of the air and land on different surfaces. And that's how you get contact transmission. So when you touch a surface and then touch your face, your mouth, whatever, that's how you get that. But then, like I said, there are some particles that atomize, and some of them can linger for quite a while, but many of them will only travel a few more feet and then they fall down. And again, that is helpful because you're getting more contact transmission versus true atomization and airborne transmission. But again, there will be a certain amount of it hanging out the air for a certain amount of time. And what happens is as this aerosolizes and as this disperses through the air, now the person on the receiving end is still going to get small amounts of this. And it doesn't take a whole lot of a virus to start causing you to get sick. So this is one of the big things that we talk about a lot and something that we have to understand when we're talking about COVID-19 and how this is transmitted. And of course, when we're talking about COVID-19, We're actually really talking about the virus, SARS-CoV-2, but the infection is COVID-19, and we've talked about this before, but I think it's just worth kind of reiterating that for a second. All right, proactive masking makes the biggest difference. In the infectious disease modeling by Eikenberry et al. Published on April 21st, 2020, demonstrated that the earlier that masks are used, the greater the effect in preventing cases. And this is even true in worst case scenarios where masks are only 20% effective in situations where transmission rates are relatively low or decreasing. So even poor mask compliance helps some, or not using the best mask helps some, but the better the quality mask and the more people who use it, the less the transmission is what that shows. And I think that's really the big thing. I use the worst case scenario for a second of that 20%, because when people try and argue that masks aren't effective, I say, okay, well, even if it filters out some of it, even if we're doing some degree of it, it's still helping reduce the rate of transmission. But realistically, if you have a universal or near universal use of masks, especially in areas where there's a growing prevalence, you can curb these cases very quickly. Building off of that and kind of touching on something that we've already discussed a little bit about, many have argued that virus particles are too small to be stopped by even N95 respirators. And like I said, while individual viral particles can pass through, transmission is usually in the form of droplets to at least some size. So like I said, sometimes you get really big fat droplets because that happens a lot. As we talk, as we yell, as we cough, as we sneeze, all those types of things, droplets form. And again, these droplets vary in size. So some you're talking about really aerosolized, but most others you're talking about droplets themselves. The New England Journal of Medicine published a correspondence by Anfenrud et al. On May 21st, 2020 that helped tackle this specific issue. And while large droplets tend to fall to the ground quickly, like we talked about, small droplets can linger in the air even for several hours. And what they did was that they performed an experiment using lasers to observe droplets during speaking. And generally with louder speech, coughing or sneezing, the droplets became larger in size like we were talking about earlier. However, a simple cloth mask was able to significantly reduce the amount of droplets released even with normal speech. And this should carry over to be even more effective with larger drops released by louder speech, coughing, sneezing, making simple masks even more effective in such situations. So a little bench study, but still one that is incredibly helpful to demonstrate the point that yes, like I was saying earlier in this podcast, simple face masks really do help. Obviously, it's not going to block out everything. Your smallest particles will still pass through. And we're going to talk about that more in a second, how that relates to other issues that come up. But what about when masks are mandated or used throughout a population? Health Affairs published a study on June 16th, 2020 by Liu and Webby covering this exact issue. And that what they did was they studied 15 states plus Washington, D.C. for the period between April 8th, 2020 and May 15th, 2020 and found that 230,000 to 450,000 cases of COVID-19 were possibly averted by these mandates. And this is one of those studies where, okay, it's hard to show by itself, but it does show a trend. And I'll admit, like, this is these prospective studies where you're talking about possible numbers. It's a lot of statistical guesstimation and figuring out and stuff like that. This is a lot of complex math that comes into play here. But what we can take away from this is that it does appear to be reductions, which is consistent with the other studies we've talked about so far. There has also been concern regarding the public use of masks appropriately. The Royal Society on June 10, 2020, published a research article by Stutt et al. That assessed the likely effectiveness. What they found was that when masks were used all the time in public, not just when symptoms first appear, so again, a proactive approach, it can lead to the mitigation of epidemic spread. Additionally, even if masks are only 50% effective at capturing virus particles that are exhaled, meaning that they're able to be filtered through the mask, they are still effective for this purpose. And that's even when addressing the concerns that face masks may be ineffective because wearers touch their faces too often or not wearing it completely appropriately. Which, even in such situations, what we're seeing is population-level benefits, while maybe we still have some issues on an individual level. So overall, as long as our population in general is doing this, we will still have a decreased incidence of spread, which is the entire goal with masks. It helps support this thought process of the phrase that maybe you've heard before, my mask protects you, your mask protects me. And that is really vital in this case because, again, it's not about you, the individual, using a mask to protect yourself. It's more about protecting others. Like I said, there are respirators that can help protect you, but unless you're in a healthcare setting or in a certain risk population group, the N95 respirators are hard to get a hold of in the first place and really should be limited to certain populations just because of the lack of overall supplies, not because that it isn't effective. And we're going to talk about that more here very shortly. To build on the point that face masks work, the CDC has given a great review that helps keep this information to the basics. It is very helpful if you are listening to this and maybe you are not from a strong science background or you're not a healthcare worker, you haven't stumbled across this because you want to learn more. Highly suggest that you go to the site because it really breaks it down to a simplified level, although I'm trying to keep it relatively simple right now. And it mentions situations where face masks should be used, how to use them correctly, and other potential protective measures such as face shields. And this is part of a larger CDC section that discusses cloth face covers and includes topics about how to wear, make, and clean cloth face masks. You have to remember that asymptomatic spread is still a real concern, and there are multiple papers demonstrating the same. And as pointed out here and should be remembered here, these masks are less about protecting you and more about protecting others and reducing the spread. All right, now that I've absolutely beaten myth one to death, because I think there is enough evidence here to at least point to something that should be a signal of this does work, let's talk about myth number two. And that's even the experts said not to wear masks or that they don't work. Okay, this is an easy one to be confused by, and this is a great example of how new evidence helps change the practice of medicine. There was a great piece published by NPR called Why There Are So Many Different Guidelines for Face Masks for the Public, and it was published on April 10th, 2020, but a lot of the key points are still there as far as what we're talking about, and so that's why I kept this. It leads off with a tweet by Dr. Jerome Adams, who's the U.S. Surgeon General, a tweet from February 29, 2020 that I've included a link to as well. But it says, quote, seriously, people, stop buying masks. They are not effective in preventing general public from catching coronavirus. But if healthcare providers can't get them to care for sick patients, it puts them and our communities at risk, end quote. However, on April 3rd, 2020, the CDC started recommending cloth face masks. Even on that same date, Dr. Jerome Adams had a YouTube video that demonstrated how to make your own mask. And as the NPR article discussed, one important factor for some of these early recommendations was the fear of shortages. And this is also reflected by the tweet by Dr. Jerome Adams, where he hits on the point about, you know, our healthcare workers won't have enough. And this is the same thing that others have talked about too, such as Dr. Fauci. But while there was initially some things that were said about healthy people not needing to wear masks, the CDC and the WHO, two of the big organizations that had said that earlier, have since made it clear that they support the use of wearing a mask even in those without symptoms. Again, when you see posts regarding what was said, check the date of the original piece and understand that when sometimes we use the words no evidence or they don't recommend something at a time, it doesn't necessarily mean that it does not work. It's just that they don't have the evidence or the information, the data points yet to recommend something. And that is a fine line. It can be one that's hard to understand. Sometimes it's easy to forget even as someone who works in the healthcare setting. You will find that most of these recommendations where they say healthy people shouldn't wear a mask or don't wear a mask or stuff like that are older recommendations and have since been replaced. A great example of that is one from California's OSHA, because people have talked about like, oh, OSHA, you know, said we shouldn't wear a mask and that don't work. And That post was from May 13th, 2020, and since that time, California's OSHA has advocated for mask use. And there's an informational poster I've included below that I think does a pretty good job breaking down how it works and why, with being pretty simplified and easy to explain and share. Also, OSHA at the national level has recommended that masks should be worn. So one state's OSHA, California, briefly said that masks do not protect users, but again, has clarified those points. Some will ask about the FDA and point to statements that they have seen with the FDA. The two most common is that they do not recommend N95s and that N95s do not prevent illness or death. In fact, with the latter one, it is misquoted. The quote that people try and give is, quote, even a properly fitted N95 mask does not prevent illness or death, end quote. The actual quote from the FDA website, which is linked again in the show notes, is, quote, however, even a properly fitted N95 respirator does not completely eliminate the risk of illness or death, end quote. Notice that difference, prevent versus completely eliminate. It's not saying that it doesn't work, it's just that you can't rely on it by itself and it will not completely stop someone from getting COVID-19. There's still always that chance, like we've talked about it. It only filters 95% of the air. That's why it has the name N95. So while it's not perfect, it does help reduce and block out a lot of the particles that are coming in through the air. So a completely atomized viral particle can still filter through, but again, talking about even like small droplets have a chance of not filtering through the N95. So they're still very good and can help reduce the wearer's risk of contracting COVID-19. And like I said, this is something that was misquoted and misunderstood. The other misquote with the FDA is that it did not recommend N95s. And this is half true, as that same article I was talking about that was published on April 5th, 2020 mentioned how the CDC did not recommend the general public wear N95 respirators. They explain, quote, those are critical supplies that must continue to be reserved for healthcare workers and other medical first responders as recommended by current CDC guidance, end quote. It is clear that they acknowledge the benefit of N95s, but they recognize it as a limited resource and that it should be reserved for certain populations like we talked about before. Moving on to the third myth, masks will weaken our immune system. All right, this one is from a gross misunderstanding of how our immune system works. And someone with even basic immunology, which apparently there are some physicians and others online who don't understand basic immunology, failed to understand how our immune system actually freaking works. The concern is not just in regards to masks, but talking about like social distancing and shelter in place orders. Where this originates from is known as the hygiene hypothesis. However, this has been more studied in regards to its role with asthma and allergies and similar conditions. What is actually being discussed is more of an upregulation of the immune system as an over-response and would be the exact opposite of the weakened immune system that's being discussed. More precisely, the real problem with the hygiene hypothesis are the implications it has on public health issues, including the spread of infectious diseases like COVID-19. There was a really well done article by the Microbiology Society published on March 28th, 2019, almost a full year before COVID-19 was declared a pandemic, which I love because it helps show that this isn't just related to this exact issue, but it carries over to what we're talking about right now. And it discusses how protective measures such as hand washing and household cleaning is vital to reducing the spread of infections, and that masks would fall in that same category. So it's not that we should, you know, just eat dirt, never wash our hands like some people actually do advocate, crazy enough, but instead that there is a line. We're trying to use these protective measures. Again, hand washing, household cleaning, and moving on to specific issues like this, where we have some form of social distancing and using masks and those types of things, because we're trying to help prevent the spread, the active spread of dangerous contagions. You have to remember, too, that we have to think about the human body. It has normal flora with a variety of bacteria and other organisms living both inside and outside of it. A number of surfaces also carry commonly exposed flora, which our body has already seen and continues to identify. This is not simply changing with masks or other barriers of protection. We are still going to be exposed to the normal flora that's around us. When I'm talking about flora, I'm talking about the bacteria, the viruses, all the other things that we are used to. The stuff that's even in our mouths and our stomach and on our skin. This is not a new concept. So just because we have a few barriers in place doesn't mean that it's going to block off everything. And we are still going to be able to function. Our immune system is still going to do the thing it needs to do. We are just trying to prevent certain infectious diseases that are dangerous, like COVID-19. People are still leaving their environment, whether it's to go outside, go to the grocery store, or come into contact with the flora, just in any number of countless ways. What this all means is that you're not in a perfectly sterile environment. You never are truly in a perfectly sterile environment. And as a result of not living in that sterile environment, you're going to come into contact with things. You're going to come into contact with things all the time. This is not a limited issue. This does not mean that your body is all of a sudden going to quit working because you had a period of time when you weren't exposed. If anything, in some ways, your body will most likely ramp up. That's why we see people with asthma and allergy issues, and we kind of look at the hygiene hypothesis. Although it's not super strong, then there are definitely some issues with debate on this, but it's not a down regulation like people are talking about. And again, the people who are talking about this have a hugely gross misunderstanding of how even the immune system works. And I'd just like to point out too, that if all it took was a few weeks of such conditions, the human race would have been wiped out a long time ago, and we would not even be having this conversation today. So this is just a silly argument when it comes down to the fundamentals and just basically from a lack of misunderstanding of some basic science. Moving on to myth number 4, if I wear a mask, I will get CO2 poisoning or not enough oxygen. This is another example of a case where basic science carries the answers. And I know some people can bastardize basic science to their own twist, but there's a really good article from the BBC written by Goodman and Carmichael, published on June 20th, 2020, that goes into a great deal discussing this particular topic. To summarize, what is basic biology is that carbon dioxide, CO2, is incredibly small in size and able to filter through a mask, much smaller in size than, say, COVID-19. CO2 will go through and around the mask. The same is true as someone breathes in oxygen. Again, another very, very small molecule, and it is something that we will be able to naturally breathe in and out, just like we're going to breathe in other molecules like nitrogen, because nitrogen makes up a huge part of the air we breathe. These are all easily filtered through a mask, even like an N95, and won't be trapped in the breathable material. If you can breathe through it, they're not going to get stuck. You may not get the same volumes that you might sometimes be used to, but you're still going to be able to adequately breathe through these masks. I just want you to think for a moment. Think about different specialty fields, like certain fields in construction, or let's stick with healthcare for a second, surgery. Surgeons, and now because of mandatory mask use in many healthcare settings, such as hospitals, nursing homes, clinics, all those types of things, we're wearing masks all day. You know, 12 plus hour shifts, we're going to be wearing masks. And I have yet to hear of surgeons who've been dropping dead for decades or even centuries at this point, where when they were using masks, because that's not how this works. Really, the mask is going to be breathable enough, or you're not going to get CO2 retention to the point that you're going to poison yourself and die or not get enough oxygen. This is complete and utter nonsense at its core. Many of these masks are heavier duty in nature too. So again, people working in the COVID-19 units who are wearing N95s, plus a lot of times a surgical mask or other covering over the addition of the N95, or even a combination of those two things plus a positive air pressure respirator or a PAPR, those all are being worn at the same time. In fact, when I'm doing an innovation and many other people are doing these innovations, they're wearing all these layers and still breathing just fine. It is incredibly rare to find any actual harm that has been documented and can only be found in rare situations with N95s. One such paper was published by the American Journal of Infection Control by Redman et al. On June 12, 2013. Notice how we're going back in time. These are older articles. So they're talking about some other things with it too. But they found the combination of a mask and N95 resulted in more symptoms than a N95 alone, along with an increase in CO2 that was not clinically relevant. Keep in mind that the wearers had their masks on for 12 hours, which would be well beyond the period of time most people would wear a simpler and more breathable mask in public. Because think about it, a lot of times, I mean, even if you're going on a long shopping trip, you're what, spending an hour with a breathable mask? This is silly. The study there is showing that you have to be wearing this for a prolonged period of time, and even then, it's still safe. An article published October 29, 2012 by Senkuhl et al. In the Annals of Occupational Hygiene is also very similar. Again, the concern is mild and really only appears to be a combination of a surgical mask over a N95. A simple surgical mask or cloth mask does not carry the same concerns. If someone is still having difficulty with wearing a mask, there are some helpful articles like one that is published with Yahoo News by Renee Fabian on May 14th, 2020. It covers a wide range of topics, including masks for children, those with anxiety when wearing masks, and those with sensory sensitivities. The final myth, and then we are going to be wrapping this up. Myth number 5, requiring masks is a way to take away our freedom and promotes living in fear. Okay, this myth is largely due to the political and polarizing world we live in. Individualism in the United States also plays an important role. Most people living in the United States are not used to either wearing masks or the true altruism concept, especially when we're talking about altruism towards others. In Asian countries, masks are frequently worn, and part of this dates back to the SARS outbreak of 2003. Masks have become a big part of Asian society because they understand how it works and the idea of trying to prevent spread. But politics, especially in the United States, carries part of the blame here, if not a very significant part of the blame here. But this may actually be changing given some political stuff going on right now. I'm not going to dive into this because I'm really trying to avoid the politics, but I think we have to mention politics here because we are talking about freedom and living in fear and stuff like that, and because it did play a role with these thought processes. Some have tried to argue that this is unprecedented in the United States and elsewhere, but this is simply not true as history continues to remind us how we tend to repeat ourselves. Mass have been mandated in the past, including the 1918 influenza pandemic. One of my favorite phrases, mask slackers, were common with the 1918 influenza pandemic, and there was the Anti-Mask League in San Francisco. Again, this is not new stuff. We have run into people who have tried to argue the same things in the past, and guess what? It didn't work. Many of the same concerns were brought up then, but we can also see how much masks were vital along with other measures to help reduce the spread of infection. Dr. Jerome Adams, again, the U.S. Surgeon General, has also tried to explain, amongst many others, that masks are not meant to suppress freedom, but rather to help open up more places sooner by allowing more freedom of movement and activity. We just simply need to use a barrier to help protect the general public. And again, it's something that most other societies have taken in. And not to get too much on the opinion anecdotal side, but it doesn't take much conversation with people in other parts of the world to realize how silly Americans appear to them when we're talking about all this debate. And I understand there are other parts of the world where there are these issues as well. But man, there are a lot of people who are doing really well right now because of mandatory mask use and because of the effectiveness of universal mask use. This is not quite to talk about the Peltzman effect, although we talked about with Ken Milne, and that's a little bit of a separate issue because, again, we're approaching more the myth side about the effectiveness of it. But just remember that there are lots of people using this, and they're already returning to a functional society like Japan, for example. Again, this is not about impeding on someone's freedom. This is more about protecting others and is something that we can be very effectively using, especially when we have masks being used throughout a population. This leads to addressing the second part of this myth, and that is that masks promote fear. Masks help reduce the spread of this and other infections, not only by reducing droplets in the amount of viral particles released, but also to help remind us that physical distance should be maintained. When you see someone wearing a mask, it not only is an actual physical barrier to avoid spread, but it also helps remind us that, oh yeah, people are sick right now. I should probably take a step back. I should probably keep some distance. I should probably be thinking more about things. Same things when we see other barriers in place and we see masks and signs and all these other types of things that help tell us that, yes, we need to be safe and we need to help each other. The mask also is in part a reminder of the social contract that we have to keep each other safe. And for these reasons, masks should not be considered a way of promoting fear, but rather to promote selfless acts to help serve and protect others. I know this is a longer podcast. I am really hoping that you can take away a lot of information on this. I knew that this was important. At least it's important to me because I have seen this debate raging on, and I want you to know that I have worked really hard to stick with the facts, to stick with the information that is key, that is important, that will make a difference. So through all of us, we can do the best that we can to keep everyone safe. And I wish that you can help spread this information because everyone needs to hear this. Everyone needs to understand that we can do better. We can help keep ourselves safe. We can protect others with simple measures. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.